Those who are older must educate the young by precept and example, how to discharge those claims which society and their Maker have upon them. Upon these youth must be laid grave responsibilities. The question is whether they are capable of governing themselves and standing forth in the purity of their God-given manhood, abhorring anything which savors of licentiousness and discord. Can I say anything that will make an impression upon the young? Never before was there so much at stake. Never were there such weighty results depending upon a generation as upon those now coming upon the stage of action. Not for one moment should they think that they can fill any position of trust without possessing a good character. Just as well might they expect to gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles. A good character must be built up, brick by brick, every day growing in proportion to the effort put forth. Those characteristics which they will take to heaven with them must be obtained by the diligent exercise of their own faculties, by improving every advantage Providence gives them, and by connecting with the source of all wisdom. Aim for no low standard. Let not your minds be cast in an inferior mold. The characters of Joseph and Daniel are good models for you to follow, but Christ is the perfect pattern. Some of the brethren and sisters in the blank church have done a good missionary work, but their interest must not flag. A few have done more than their strength would admit, but it was their meat and drink to do it. All can act a part in this work, and none are excused. Jesus would have all who profess his name become earnest workers. It is necessary that every individual member build upon the rock, Christ Jesus. A storm is arising that will wrench and test the spiritual foundation of everyone to the utmost. Therefore, avoid the sandbed. Hunt for the rock. Dig deep. Lay your foundation sure. Build, oh, build for eternity. Build with tears, with heartfelt prayers. Let every one of you from henceforth make your life beautiful by good works. Calebs are the men most needed in these last days. That which will make our churches vigorous and successful in their efforts is not bustle, but quiet, humble work. Not parade and bombast, but patient, prayerful, persevering effort. He that is not with me, said Christ, is against me. It is wholehearted, thoroughly decided men and women who will stand now. Christ sifted his followers again and again until at one time there remained only 11 and a few faithful women to lay the foundation of the Christian church. There are those who will stand back when burdens are to be borne, but when the church is all aglow, they catch the enthusiasm, sing and shout and become rapturous. But watch them. When the fervor is gone, only a few faithful Calebs will come to the front and display unwavering principle. These are salt that retains the savor. It is when the work moves hard that the churches develop the true helpers. These will not be talking of self, vindicating self, but will lose their identity in Jesus Christ. To be great in God's kingdom is to be a little child in humility, in simplicity of faith, and in the purity of love. All pride must perish. All jealousy be overcome. All ambition for supremacy be given up, and the meekness and trust of the child be encouraged. All such will find Christ their rock of defense, their strong tower. In him they may trust implicitly, and he will never fail them. Oh, that all who believe present truth would be warned to seek the Lord. The thoughts of God's infinite mercy and of his matchless love should influence all to imitate his example. But this is not the case. Some of our sisters indulge too freely in a love for dress and display. They do not dress at all in harmony with our holy faith. This is true of Sister Blank. The world should have been a better example that this sister has given it. She should feel her God-given responsibility to cast the entire weight of her influence upon the side of Christ and seek to make those with whom she associates less worldly. She and Sister Blank would be of far greater advantage to the church if they would encourage plainness of dress in themselves and others. Those sisters who are dressmakers and who study the fashion plates frequently lead others in the church to do that which is displeasing to God by encouraging them to cut and trim their dresses in imitation of the world. The efforts of these sisters to do good would be far more acceptable to God were there seen in their lives less dressing, less cheap worldly talking, and less visiting. Less complaining and murmuring against the ministers laboring for you, and more praying and reading of the Bible. The Lord is displeased with the course pursued by many in the church toward some of their ministering brethren. He bids you cease your cruel speeches and let words of encouragement take the place of your murmuring, your repining, your fault-finding. Christ is speaking to you in the person of His saints. And you have despised his counsel and rejected his reproof. Do this no longer. Elder Blank has a work to do, not only in the East, but in many places. God will be with him and prosper him if he hides in Jesus. He is not infallible. He may at times err in judgment. But be careful how you speak that which will make of none effect the words God bids him utter. When he knows what the will of God is, he would not hesitate to do it should it cost him his life. While many of you plan only how you can please self and have an easy life, his whole life and interest is wrapped up in the cause of God. While studying and planning for the cause, he has sometimes exercised shrewdness and sharpness which has led others to misjudge him. His aim was not to advantage himself, but the cause which he loved. While the Lord would have you faithfully uphold the hands of his tried servants, he would warn you against placing too great confidence in those who have newly come to the faith, or with whose past life and labors you are unacquainted. It is your privilege to be a prosperous, happy church. Let each one of you search his own heart, cleanse the defiled soul temple, and watch unto prayer. Be determined you will seek Jesus until you find him. Release not your grasp until his love dwells in your heart and you have his spirit subduing your life and fashioning your character. Then believe, and with boldness you may approach his throne, knowing that he will hear your prayers.
Chapter 16. Laborers for God.
Fellow laborers in the great harvest field, we have but little time in which to labor. Now is the most favorable opportunity we shall ever have, and how carefully ought every moment to be employed. So devoted was our Redeemer to the work of saving souls that he even longed for his baptism of blood. The apostles caught the zeal of their Master and firmly, steadily, zealously went forward to the accomplishment of their great work, fighting against principalities and powers and spiritual wickedness in high places. We are living in a time when even greater earnest is needed than in the apostles' day. But among many of the ministers of Christ, there is a feeling of unrest, a desire to imitate the romantic style of modern revivalists, a desire to do something great, to create a sensation, to be accounted able speakers, and to gain for themselves honor and distinction. If such could encounter perils and receive the honor given to heroes, they would engage in the work with unflagging energy. But to live and labor almost unknown, to toil and sacrifice for Jesus in obscurity, receiving no special praise from men, this requires a soundness of principle and a steadfastness of purpose that but few possess. Were there a greater effort to walk humbly with God, looking away from men and laboring only for Christ's sake, far more would be accomplished. My ministering brethren, seek Jesus with all lowliness and meekness. Do not try to draw the attention of the people to yourselves. Let them lose sight of the instrument while you exalt Jesus, talk of Jesus, lose self in Jesus. There is too much bustle and stir about our religion while Calvary and the cross are forgotten. We are in the greatest peril when we receive praise of one another, when we enter into a confederacy to exalt one another. The great burden of the Pharisees was to secure the praise of men, and Christ told them that it was all the reward they would ever receive. Let us take up our appointed work and do it for Christ. If we suffer privation, let it be for His sake. Our divine Lord was made perfect through suffering. Oh, when shall we see men laboring as He labored? The Word of God is our standard. Every act of love, every word of kindness, every prayer in behalf of the suffering and oppressed is reported before the eternal throne and placed on heaven's imperishable record. The divine word pours light into the most darkened understanding, and that light makes the most cultivated feel their inefficiency and sinfulness. The enemy is buying souls today very cheap. "Ye have sold yourselves for naught," is the language of Scripture. One is selling his soul for the world's applause, another for money, one to gratify base passions, another for worldly amusement. Such bargains are made daily. Satan is bidding for the purchase of Christ's blood and buying them cheap, notwithstanding the infinite price which has been paid to ransom them. Great blessings and privileges are ours. We may secure the most valuable heavenly treasures. Let ministers and people remember that gospel truth ruins if it does not save. The soul that refuses to listen to the invitations of mercy from day to day can soon listen to the most urgent appeals without an emotion stirring his soul. As laborers with God, we need more fervent piety and less self-exaltation. The more self is exalted, the more will faith in the testimonies of the Spirit of God be lessened. Those who know the most closely connected with God are the ones who know His voice when He speaks to them. Those who are spiritual discern spiritual things. Such will feel grateful that the Lord has pointed out their errors, while those who trust wholly in themselves will see less and less of God in the testimonies of His Spirit. Our work must be accompanied with deep humiliation, fasting, and prayer. We must not expect all peace and joy. There will be sadness. But if we sow in tears, we shall reap in joy. Darkness and despondency may at times enter the heart of the self-sacrificing ones, but this is not against them. It may be God's design to cause them to seek Him more earnestly. What we need now is Calebs, men who are faithful and true. Indolence marks the lives of too many at the present day. They turn their shoulders from the wheel just when they should persevere and bring all their powers into active exercise. Ministers of Christ, awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. Your labors taste so strongly of self that Christ is forgotten. Some of you are pampered and flattered too much. As in the days of Noah, there is too much eating and drinking, planting and building. The world has stolen the energies of the servants of Christ. Brethren, if you would have your religion honored by unbelievers, honor it yourselves by corresponding works. By a close connection with God and a strict adherence to Bible truth in the face of difficulty and worldly pressure, you may infuse the spirit of truth into the hearts of your children so that they will work effectually with you as instruments in God's hands for good. Many are incapacitated for labor, both mentally and physically, by overeating and the gratification of the lustful passions. The animal propensities are strengthened, while the moral and spiritual nature is enfeebled. When we shall stand around the great white throne, what a record will the lives of many then present! Then will they see what they might have done had they not debased their God-given powers. Then will they realize what height of intellectual greatness they might have attained had they given to God all their physical and mental strength He had entrusted to them. In their agony of remorse, they will long to have their lives to live over again. I call upon those who profess to be light-bearers, in samples to the flock, to depart from all iniquity. Use well the little remnant of time now left you. Have you that stronghold of God, that consecration to His service, that your religion will not fail you in the face of direst persecution? The deep love of God alone will sustain the soul amid the trials which are just upon us. Self-denial and the cross are our portion. Will we accept it? None of us need expect that when the last great trials come upon us, a self-sacrificing, patriotic spirit will be developed in a moment because needed. No, indeed, this spirit must be blended with our daily experience and infused into the minds and hearts of our children, both by precept and example. Mothers in Israel may not be warriors themselves, but they may raise up warriors who shall gird on the whole armor and fight manfully the battles of the Lord. Ministers and people need the converting power of grace before they will be able to stand in the day of the Lord. The world is fast approaching that point in iniquity and human depravity when God's interference will become necessary. And at that time, His professed followers should be more marked for their fidelity to His holy law. Their prayer will be that as of David, "It is time for Thee, Lord, to work, for they have made void Thy law." And by their conduct they will say, "Therefore I love Thy commandments above gold, yea, above fine gold." The very contempt that is shown to the law of God is sufficient reason why His commandment-keeping people should come to the front and show their esteem and reverence for His downtrodden law. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. The very atmosphere is polluted with sin. Soon God's people will be tested by fiery trials, and the great proportion of those who now appear to be genuine and true will prove to be base metal. Instead of being strengthened and confirmed by opposition, threats, and abuse, they will cowardly take the side of the opposers. The promise is, "Them that honor me, I will honor." Shall we be less firmly attached to God's law because the world at large have attempted to make it void? Already the judgments of God are abroad in the land, as seen in storms, in floods, in tempests, in earthquakes, in peril by land and by sea. The great I Am is speaking to those who make void His law. When God's wrath is poured out upon the earth, who will then be able to stand? Now is the time for God's people to show themselves true to principle. When the religion of Christ is most held in contempt, when His law is most despised, then should our zeal be the warmest and our courage and firmness the most unflinching. To stand in defense of truth and righteousness when the majority forsake us, to fight the battles of the Lord when champions are few, this will be our test. At this time we must gather warmth from the coldness of others, courage from their cowardice, and loyalty from their treason. The nation will be on the side of the great rebel leader. The test will surely come. 36 years ago, I was shown that what is now transpiring would take place, that the observance of an institution of the papacy would be enforced upon the people by a Sunday law, while the sanctified rest day of Jehovah would be trampled underfoot. The captain of our salvation will strengthen his people for the conflict in which they must engage. How often, when Satan has brought all his forces to bear against the followers of Christ, and death stares them in the face, have earnest prayers put up in faith brought the captain of the Lord's host upon the field of action, and turned the tide of battle and delivered the oppressed. Now is the time when we should closely connect with God, that we may be hid when the fierceness of his wrath is poured upon the sons of men. We have wandered away from the old landmarks. Let us return. If the Lord be God, serve him. If Baal, serve him. Which side will you be on?
Chapter 17. Agents of Satan.
Satan uses men and women as agents to solicit to sin and make it attractive. These agents he faithfully educates to so disguise sin that he can more successfully destroy souls and rob Christ of his glory. Satan is the great enemy of God and man. He transforms himself through his agents into angels of light. In the Scriptures he is called a destroyer, an accuser of the brethren, a deceiver, a liar, a tormentor, and a murderer. Satan has many in his employ, but is most successful when he can use professed Christians for his satanic work. And the greater their influence, the more elevated their position, the more knowledge they profess of God and his service, the more successfully can he use them. Whoever entices to sin is his agent. While attending one of the Eastern camp meetings, I was introduced one Friday to a man who occupied a tent with several women and children. That night I was unable to sleep. My soul was deeply burdened. While pleading with God in the night season, a vision given years ago at the time when the course of Nathan Fuller was reproved was distinctly revived in my mind. At that time, I was shown three men whom I should meet who would be pursuing the same course of iniquity under the profession of godliness. This man was one of the three. As I bore my testimony in the morning meeting, the power and Spirit of God rested upon me, but I did not mention individual cases. Later in the day, I felt clear in reference to my duty and bore my testimony, referring to his case as most marked. By this course of action, this man was going exactly contrary to the direction of the apostle to abstain from all appearance of evil. He was breaking the seventh commandment while professedly keeping the fourth. By his deception, he was gathering around him a company of women who followed him from place to place as a faithful wife would accompany her husband. As a people, we are looked upon as peculiar. Our position and faith distinguish us from every other denomination. If we are in life and character no better than worldlings, they will point the finger of scorn at us and say, "These are Seventh-day Adventists. We have here a sample of the people who keep the seventh day for Sunday." The stigma which should be rightfully attached to such a class is thus placed upon all who are conscientiously keeping the seventh day. Oh, how much better it would be if such a class would not make any pretension to obey the truth. I felt led out to rebuke this man in the name of the Lord and to call upon the women who were with him to separate from him and withdraw their misplaced confidence, for unhappiness and ruin were in the path they had entered upon.